Subcommittee on Transportation Economic Development for the Senate Special Budget Committee for July 20th, 2005. First item on the agenda is a work session, House Bill 2056.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2056 authorizes the Oregon Liquor Control Commission to charge a one-time non-refundable fee of $400 for granting of licenses, including applications for a license on change of ownership. And the fee would apply to all license categories except for temporary sales, special events, growers, and full on-premise sales. The bill also contains a provision that requires, let's see, what does it do? It changes the renewal period for licenses from 1 year to 2 years, doubles the license fees to cover the longer period, limits, doesn't increase those fees, it just doubles it to cover 2 years instead of one. Limits city and county authority to adopt time, place, and manner regulations on businesses that sell alcohol to the regulation of nuisances occurring on the licensed premises. There is a fiscal impact. It does not affect the general fund because the revenue that will be collected under the fee is sufficient to cover the cost of the additional position. And it is also understood that with an increase in the fee, OLCC will improve its processing times to issue routine license applications in 45 days, depending upon when the local jurisdiction recommends recommendation is received. And up at this point, it's taking up to 120 days to process those licenses.
Further discussion? Seeing none, there are... Yes.
Just a question, because I hadn't had the opportunity to hear this bill. This is the industry asking to have a fee imposed on themselves in exchange for faster processing.
Right.
Okay.
That's my understanding.
Sarah Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Since we had our separation of our ways and means process, and I kind of lost track of the... but didn't we approve of... OLCC, some capital, major capital improvements in their processing of fees, not fees, but applications and licensing. Didn't we do?
Mr. Chair, Senator Morris, we approved a package in their budget to improve their technology.
Right,
it was in their
which
base
would
budget.
Right, in their base budget.
Including the card file system. I guess the point that we're both trying to make, we're helping each other to make it, is that asking OLCC to improve their processing without giving them the requisite tools to do it. And I think in my mind, I was just trying to link up that we had given them the opportunity. This is the industry saying we need to have expeditious servicing of these licenses in order to keep our folks in business.
Right. Mr. Chair and Senator Johnson, the $400 fee will cover the investigation that it takes to investigate a new license fee requesting.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, could I just ask for clarification?
Sure.
Just to give you just kind of an analogy here of a story. There's a tavern, and people are allowed to drink until 2 o'clock. They leave that premise. The premise closes down. They go a block from the premise and create a disturbance on this change that says nuisance is occurring on licensed premises. That then avoids the people who have now left the premise and gone a block from being from falling out. The licensee is not responsible. Is that it?
That's correct.
That's correct.
Clarification. Okay. Thank you very much.
This bill will probably not move immediately. If it passes here, will not move immediately to full. I think there's still some discussion that needs to be had in the leadership. So, is there a motion? Senator Johnson.
Mr. Chair, I would move, there are no amendments, are there? I would move House Bill 2056 to full with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Further discussion? Seeing none. Objections? Seeing none. So ordered. Thanks, Susie. Next item on the agenda is public hearing work session for Senate Bill 5632. Open the public hearing. Relating to state financial administration. Trying to get a better rate on bonds before the rates go away.
Chair and committee members, I placed before you a packet that we will go through. And I was going to call to the table a couple of folks to testify on the bill before we go into work session. Both Greg Jeffrey from the Budget Management Division and Laura Lockwood McCall from the Treasurer's Office. And while they're coming forward, basically just wanted to explain in general the packet that's placed before you. 5632 is a blank bill that we will be talking about amendments to that would carry out the contents of the original bond bill, which was Senate Bill 5503, with a few exceptions. And we'll talk about those exceptions because they are not a part of any agreed-upon plan yet. So what we'll ultimately be looking at is moving out amendments to the bill that are agreed to, decided the same in both the House and Senate budget, and non-controversial ultimately. But they're here to explain the components of this action and the justification for splitting the bond bill out, because there are some time-sensitive issues that are being addressed through this action.
Mr. Jeffries, would you like to start off?
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Greg Jeffrey. I'm the finance manager with the Department of Administrative Services. I'm here to share some comments on the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 5632. The state of Oregon requires a comprehensive state bond authorization bill every biennium. The bond bill, as it's referred to, limits the amount of each type of state bond that may be issued during the biennium. The emergency board does not have the authority to modify those bond limits during the interim. State agencies with bond issuance authority have their bond limit requests evaluate as their agency is going through budget evaluation. when the governor submitted his recommended budget, the bond limit recommendation was in Senate Bill 5503. This bill, Senate Bill 5632, is a modified version of the 0507 bond limit recommendation. What this bill does not include is four specific authorizations. Those authorizations are for the two types of Oregon general obligation bonds that are issued by the Higher Education Department. Lottery bonds is the third that is not included, and certificates of participation are not included. They're not included because final decisions regarding the amounts and the projects that are going forward in 05 or 07 through these vehicles have not been determined. Section 1 of the bill provides for the recommended authorization levels, and it's authorized within one of two broad types. The first is general obligation bonds. The second is revenue bonds. There are two. Well, general obligation bonds are the strongest form of credit that the state has available to it. They're established as amendments to the Oregon Constitution approved by the voters. The state pledges its full taxing power to repay these bonds. Within this bill, there's two subgroups. The first is the general fund obligation, and there's one item in this subcategory. That is the Department of Environmental Quality pollution control bonds. These bonds are repaid either with general fund money or other funds. In the past, there's been a mix of these pollution control bonds as far as the source of repayment. It's been a combination of both general fund and other funds. The bond level request of the bonds in this particular request are all going to be repaid with other funds. They'll be self-supporting. The other subcategory within the general fund is dedicated fund obligations. These are self-supporting lending programs which finance relatively low-interest loans through the sale of the state's general obligation bonds. And the loan repayments are used to repay the bonds. The second group of bonds within the bill are revenue bonds. revenue bonds are established by the legislature. In this case, what the state does is it pledges a specific revenue stream as a source of bond repayment. Again, there are two subgroups within this general class. The first is direct revenue bonds. Within this subclass, there are four purposes for which direct revenue bond authority is being requested. These bonds are all self-supporting based on the revenue streams that have been pledged as a source of repayment. The second subgroup within this revenue bond class is the pass-through revenue bonds. Under this particular situation, the state is, quote-unquote, the issuer of the bonds. However, the bonds are not an obligation to be repaid by the state. They're instead repaid by the program users. Section 2 of the bill talks to the private activity bond allocation. Generally, the federal tax code permits state and local governments to issue tax-exempt obligations to finance government purpose facilities. That would include facilities like a local jail or a state prison or a water treatment facility. However, the federal code allows certain windows within the tax code that permits private or that permits tax-exempt bonds that can be issued for very specific private business benefit, and those are called private activity bonds. Those purposes would be industrial development projects, for instance, or low-income housing projects. Federal law, although they allow these windows, they limit the amount of private activity bonds that can be issued by a state or any of the local jurisdictions within the state within each calendar year. There is a formula that determines what the level of PAB cap is for each state, and it's based on population and a certain level of authority per capita. For Oregon, currently, it's $80 per person. What this bill does is it designates for certain state bond issuers a specific amount of the private activity cap that it has access to during each of the calendar years. And then the balance of the PAB cap or private activity cap is allocated to the private activity bond committee. That committee is established in Oregon statutes. It's made up of a DAS representative, a representative appointed by the treasurer, and a private citizen appointed by the governor. The committee reviews requests during every calendar year by local governments and state agencies and awards portions of that private activity cap, you know, that it was allocated for these particular purposes for which it's being requested. Now, the private activity bond allocations in this portion of the bill are not authorization to issue additional bonds. You know, those are within the caps, you know, that are established in Section 1 of the bill. Finally, with the handout that I handed you, I've just provided a status of all of the bond programs that were in the original request, just kind of in the way of status and background. And what's being shown there is on the far left column is the specific program as it's represented in the bill. The second column shows whether or not the debt service is repaid with general fund or lottery fund dollars. The third column identifies how much is outstanding in the way of principal for each of those programs as of March the 1st of this year. And the the final column provides a brief description, you know, of the purpose of the program. Those are my comments. There are representatives from each of the bonding agencies here if you have any specific questions about them. And if not, I'll turn it over to Laura.
Laura, a few brief comments would be appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you. Laura Lockwood McCall, Director of Debt Management, Oregon State Treasury. Greg's done a very good job of giving an overview of the overall bond bill. I've submitted just a one-page summary, a little additional information above what staff's provided, of various bond measures that are in our queue. And we have 10 transactions between now and the end of August that we're working actively on that basically are on hold in the absence of passage of some sort of a bond bill authorization that expired on June 30th. There are large cap or authorizations that were in the 03-05 biennial bond bill for many of the pass-through revenue bond programs, the housing programs, et cetera. But all of that came to a stop until we make a decision about the 05-07 biennium, and usually the bond bill follows. So I just wanted to show you a summary of what those transactions are. In 9 out of 10 cases, these are pass-through revenue bonds, no general fund impact. And in the case, there are 2 general obligation bonds, a refunding and a new money transaction. Again, they're self-supporting transactions, not really part of the budget package per se. So a number of people, are here today if you had any questions. But if these things back up, I can't tell you that interest rates are going to get better or worse and what the impact will be fiscally. But we are at a juncture where we'll need to decide whether to go ahead and refund a DEQ bond issue without doing energy, and the cost by doing 2 transactions instead of 1 will be at least $50,000 additional legal costs. So that's probably the only one I can tell you with some certainty will cost the state money if we delay passage of either the whole bond bill or the portions that are being presented today. Thank you.
Question, Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Beyond just additional costs, are there not any other issues related to this? I noted with interest on one of the handouts the bond transactions that will be delayed in the absence of approval of a 05-07 bond bill. There appear to be some private industries that may be beneficiaries of a bond issuance by Oregon Economic and Community Development. And I'm just wondering, beyond the costs, are contracts in place? Are relationships formed? Are local expectations high? Our failure to act on this could impact these businesses beyond the state agency folks?
I'll make a few remarks, but we do have representatives, I believe, from OECDD. And the answer is yes. We have a brand new program that they've been working on called IDB Express, and that's working in partnership with the banks throughout the state who make loans to private industry for expansion of facilities. And in partnership with them, they're able to make the loans, but they sell their loan to us, which we sell back to them, but on a tax-exempt basis, which allows them to provide lower-cost loans than they'd otherwise be able to provide. There's a number of transactions that are poised to price and close, and so failure of ourselves to complete those transactions will impact the community. Willamette University, through the Oregon Facilities Authority, is ready to construct a new dormitory nearby and is very anxious to get in the market and to get their proceeds so they can continue their construction plan. So the answer is certainly yes. It's very difficult to quantify specifically, but I think that the number of people who are behind me today probably nodding their heads in agreement, and if you'd like to hear from them.
You've answered my question to the degree that I needed it answered. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Other questions?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Morris.
Thank you. I don't know what the correct vernacular is in the public sector, but in the private sector, a discussion like this would focus on the debt coverage ratio. Can you address that issue in terms of the safety, you might say, of our current bonding obligations in relation to the revenue to cover that debt?
Through the Senator Shader. In general, each of the transactions before you today is a self-supporting transaction. The cash flows in each case are sufficient to cover their own debt service. There's not a single one of these transactions where there's any risk to the state whatsoever. They're all ready to go to the market with good enough quality credit, either private placements, which don't require a credit rating, or in the case of general obligation bonds, our current credit rating of AA- would apply for those. I'm not quite sure I can tell you coverage per se, but I can tell you that in each case, these are bankable, ready-to-go transactions in the marketplace.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Good question. Senator Berger?
Well, I don't know if I have a question, but for people like me that aren't all that fond of bonding, I'm not exactly talking to, not going to be the most popular person in the room, probably. I see, you know, that this is a matter of millions. Am I wrong? If you don't get the window of opportunity that you need, and that's the whole thing about bonding. And I'm just, this is kind of an aside, but at some point, do you see your obligation to say that the state has a maximum of bonding that has occurred in to send up red flags to those of us who are passing legislation that perhaps we need to consider how much more bonding we want to do, irregardless of the bond rating. So I'd like a response to that.
I think what the senators are trying to get at, of course, is the safety ratios we've talked about with lottery bonds, we've talked about general obligation bonds, and where we stack, will these put us in a, you've sort of answered a little bit with Senator Morris, but you know, where does this put us in our safety scale? What are the standards we use?
Through the Senator Schrader to Senator Berger, as you may or may not remember, I did a few presentations when I first arrived here in Oregon back in the beginning of the session, I believe in January, where we looked at the overall state debt capacity, which was something we'd also shared with something called the State Debt Policy Advisory Commission, made up of senators, legislators, and I believe the state treasurer. When we look at overall debt capacity, yes, indeed, we need to make sure that our overall debt, and particularly debt service as a percentage of our general fund revenue, stays within certain well-defined limits so that we don't run afoul of losing our credit rating, having sufficient, you know, being in a situation with budget cuts where we aren't able to pay our debt service or we have to cut something else. We have different types of limits for lottery bonds, and we have capacity constraints that keep us from issuing too many lottery bonds. In the case of housing, for example, we have an overall debt limit on the amount of multifamily and single-family outstanding indebtedness. None of the things in the bond bill really changes that limit. The legislature is still controlling overall indebtedness levels. Many of the industrial development bonds are pure pass-through conduit revenue bonds. There's no general fund impact. There's no general fund. The state is not on the hook to pay any of this debt service ever. So it's difficult for me to answer whether there's an upper limit that the state should issue, because the goal is to encourage economic development. And the rating agencies don't look at those levels of indebtedness, for example, and see it as a negative. If anything, it's a positive, in that the state is encouraging economic development. I think with housing, there are some prudent limits. We do evaluate cash flows, and I do think that even though it's a pass-through program with mortgage programs, it's important to keep asking ourselves that question about what's the right level of debt, and to make sure that we don't pick up some sort of a contingent liability, even if we don't have a direct liability, that the cash flows are always sufficient. I guess that would be my generic answer. We look at coverage factors for ODOT. The rating agencies tell us, you know, what our coverage needs to be for selling transportation bonds, for example. And we try and do that in a long-term, managed, planned fashion so that we don't get into the situation you're talking about, over our head into too much debt. My experience thus far has been that it's fairly well managed. The rating agencies see us as a moderately low to moderate debt burden state. That's not to say that we don't have to keep our eyes on each and every single bond transaction.
All right. Thank you very much.
These are all self-supporting, no risk to the state. I like hearing that. That increases my level of confidence quite a little bit also. I think the major reason we're doing this bill here today, I think as staff alluded to, is just trying to keep the wheels moving. There's an opportunity to lower our costs, you know, which is excellent. And there are several areas that are not included because we have not reached some general consensus. That would be, of course, the higher education area. some of the lottery bonding areas and the certificates of participation. That's why they're not included, or we would certainly like to get the bidder interest rate with those, but we have policy decisions yet to come. So we're trying to get the best deal possible with as much information as we currently all agree to, apparently, at this point in time. Further discussion or motion would be in order?
Mr. Chairman,
oh, public hearing, I'm sorry. Yes, sir. Anyone else feel a burning desire that have to come up here and tell us about your specific exciting bonding program? Seeing none, I appreciate the audience's indulgence, and this has actually been very informative. It was a public hearing, go to work session. I apologize for that.
Mr. Chair, I would move the dash one amendments to 5632, Senate Bill 5632.
Any further discussion? Objections? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I would move the amended Senate Bill 5632 to the full Senate Special Committee on Budget with a due pass recommendation.
Very good. Discussion? Objection? Seeing none? So ordered. We're adjourned. Senator Johnson?
Sure.